Well, greetings, everyone, and welcome to the Law Hour Editorial Review. The Law Hour is sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. The Law Hour is an educational service to public interest. I'm your narrator, George Gordon. The Law Hour and Editorial Review is heard nationally 7 days a week here in the United States and in more than 75 countries around the world over the Internet. For more information about the Law Hour and Editorial Review, please visit our webpage at georgegordon.org. Again, that's georgegordon.org. The Law Hour and Editorial Review brings you important information about law, news, and current events. So stay tuned for tonight's special report on current events when we come back. You know, when people call the law school, they sometimes ask me how they can learn more about the topics that I speak on over the air. Now, keep in mind that most of the topics that you hear on this program, I teach in detail in one of my classes here at the law school. For example, when you hear me talking about the common law, it was Alfred the Great who codified the common law back in 872 AD into 49 principles or statutes, of which 22 of those statutes are and have been incorporated into our Constitution and our Bill of Rights. This common law was taken from the Mosaic Law given to Moses at Mount Sinai, which is recorded in Exodus 19, verse 16, through Exodus 24, verse 8, and it includes negligence, insurance, and taxes, such as income tax, property tax, and Social Security taxes. Now, these IRS tax laws are a counterfeit of our tithing laws of the Scripture, and these IRS tax laws work a theft on everyone who participates in them. Now, the God of Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob gave us a better way of life than income tax and Social Security, and that's the basis of our tax and status school. We owe this income tax, all right, and we owe this Social Security tax because we've contracted into it. Now, if you'd like to learn more about tax and status, why don't you write for our free general law CD package? Remember, that's the place to start. It's educational, it's informative, it's entertaining, and best of all, it's free. And you can call right now to order yours. The number to call, 417-273-4967. Once more, that's area code 417-273-4967. Now, if you're online, you can go to our website. That's georgegordon.org. Just send us an email, georgegordon.org. Click onto the email machine. Send us an email request for that free general law CD package. Once more, that's georgegordon.org. Or call us direct at 417-273-4967. All right, we have been reviewing current events. And the last time we were talking about the International Forecaster. Bob Chapman puts out the International Forecaster. I recommend it highly. It's $129.95 in U.S. funds, $130 a year. It actually works out to only 6.5 cents a page. It typically will contain about 20 pages, comes out twice a week, and doesn't come out every Wednesday and every Saturday. There's a few days in the year that he takes off, but there's probably 95 to 100 issues a year. And it's probably the most comprehensive economic newsletter in the marketplace. I say the most comprehensive. It's certainly the biggest. As far as I can tell, I can't think of any newsletter bigger than that, or one that's put out more regularly. Normally, they come out once a month, or in the case of the Mogambo newsletter, published on Kitco, comes out once a week. And the Chapman newsletter, the International Forecaster, comes out twice a week, and it isn't 6 or 7 pages, it's 20 pages. And if you multiply that out, you know, throughout the year, you get 52 weeks in the year, and 52 times 40 takes us to 2,000 pages a year. Now, that's a lot of information for you to digest. And for $130 a year, it works out to about 6 cents a page. And I think it's probably one of the most economical newsletters. Certainly going to tell you more than you're going to get on the CBS Evening News or the Lehrer News Hour, although I monitor those mainstream broadcasts regularly. Every day I'm up there listening to my daily dose of propaganda so that I can find out what my government wants me to know. So that in case I need to, I can say, oh, yeah, the official party line is, here's the official government CPI index report. They're telling us inflation's running at 3.4%. That was the last number I saw the other day. They're expanding money supply by about anywhere from 10 to 11.9%, have been over the past 4 or 5 years. And the only place that you can get an M3 money report is from the underground press. You're not going to get it from the Federal Reserve. They shut it off. And, of course, Katie's not going to report anything that she's not supposed to. Sweet girl that she is. God, we all love Katie Couric, don't we? Now, there's a little bit here about terrorists, and I want to share with you here this terrorist story because, you know, this is the era, or the arena of terrorism in the world today. The International Forecaster reports that orders for the release of mass murder terrorist Luis Posada Carreles came straight from the Bush crime family. Posada knows too much, and we can assure you that within a year, Posada will die of natural causes. He was right in the middle of the Guns for Drugs trade, or drug trade, run by the George H.W. Bush and Oliver North and their cohorts. It was our CIA who trained Poseida and ordered him to destroy a Cuban airline with 73 athletes and students aboard. They then broke him out of a Venezuelan jail and put him back to work on Operation Condor. Poseida, in 2005, was brought back to the United States by the CIA and the Bush faction. What a sad state our country is in. America is run by a crime family that produces and sanctions terrorism. I'm going to underline that. A crime family that produces and sanctions terrorism. I don't know if you're aware of, but if you're not, you ought to be aware that the 9/11 attacks, apparently, are false flag operations that were carried out by our own government, the CIA, probably, at the behest of the White House. Now, there's a number of videos and exposés on that subject, so I'm not going to waste your time telling you what you probably already know. But this guy, Poseida, over here, back in the 1970s, under the CIA's direction, blew up a Cuban airliner, which is no big deal. I mean, that was during the Cold War era, and after all, our CIA is at war with Russia and with Cuba, and they're not our friends, and blowing up their airliners over there is a part and parcel of that war. Now, that being said, keep in mind that we're the ones over here with holy righteous indignation in the United States now. We're the ones blowing the whistle on the Arab terrorists who are at war with the United States and are blowing up our airliners. Well, at least that's what we're being told. And they're doing it, and they're dirty, rotten terrorists for which we need to spend $100 billion a year to battle them. Well, here's a guy who's a convicted terrorist, and the Cubans and the Venezuelans would like to get hold of him so that they could punish him. They think that blowing up a Cuban airliner and killing a bunch of Venezuelan athletes is a crime. They thought that was something terrible, wicked, awful, and evil, and they want to do something about it. Well, I wanted to point that out to you, not for the sake of the Poseida case, but listen to this. The CIA has hired a Pakistani terrorist group that has carried out a series of deadly terrorist attacks inside of Iran. It's the Baluchi tribe, and it operates in Pakistan's Baluchistan province, just across the border from Iran. The leader is Abdel Malek Reji. They have already admitted murdering Iranian captives. Reji already used to fight with the Taliban and is labeled part drug smuggler and part Sunni activist. He attacks inside Iran and then on camera executes his prisoners. This is exactly what we would expect from CIA mercenaries. Now, I wanted to point that out because we have reported here in the past that there are a number. In fact, the numbers that I'm seeing here in some of the reports are as many as hundreds. We don't know how many hundreds, but hundreds of American agents, that is, Army Rangers and other operatives and mercenaries, are operating inside of Iran trying to provoke the Iranians to an act of war. We are doing our government, our Army, our Navy, our Marines, and our CIA and other government agencies are doing everything they can inside of Iran to provoke war. We need war with Iran. I don't know that I need war with Iran. I don't know that you do, but our government does. And it's just a matter of time. And the other day, the Iranians captured a bunch of British sailors. It was 15 of them. You probably heard this on Katie's News Hour, you know, the Lair News Hour and Katie Kirk. And that I thought was going to be the catalyst that would launch us into war, but the Iranians backed off at the last minute and released them. And wouldn't be a bit surprised, but that's one of those kind of agent provocateur type operations where, of course, our side says, oh no, those dirty Iranians, they've captured our soldiers, our sailors. I just wanted you to point out that in 1937, American foreign policy was to provoke war with Japan. Now, it isn't surprising that they finally succeeded. You know, the Japanese took all of these types of operations against them and their interests in the 1937, 38, 39, 40 period of time. And then they finally got a belly full of it, and they said, okay, well, the Americans want war. Let's go give it to them. And so they went to war against us. And I wasn't surprised, after having read the history of it, that the Japanese attacked us at Pearl Harbor. The thing that surprised me was that they waited for 5 years to do it, because the primary act of war against Japan, instigated by the United States, that's the Roosevelt administration, was a total embargo on oil from the West to Japan. I did that in 1937. That reminded me of the Lusitania. Back in 1917, the United States government was secretly, not openly now, but very secretly, aiding the British in the war, was World War I, against Germany. Now, you got to remember that here in America, we have the largest single ethnic group in the nation are Germans. 60 million Germans live here in the United States. So, you know, you take a group of people, well, back in World War I, the largest single ethnic group in America were Germans. And here's the United States at war, or not the United States, but Great Britain at war with Germany. And here in the United States, you got 60 million Germans. Well, the Wilson administration is secretly sending bullets and guns and armaments over to Great Britain. And our official position was we're neutral. Well, there was a British ship over here called the Lusitania, and the Germans knew what the Americans were doing. In fact, these armaments were being manufactured by American companies in Fort Wayne, Indiana, and they were manufacturing the special British caliber ammunition. It wasn't like it was the Enfield 30-06 ammunition that we used in our rifles. We were making the special British caliber ammunition and then shipping it on British merchant ships, especially their ships like the Lusitania, which were passenger ships. Well, you know, the Germans aren't stupid, and so they knew from their intelligence sources what we were doing. So they published in five major newspapers and said, listen, you Americans over there, you're shipping armaments now to the British, and the British are at war with us, and you Americans are claiming that you are neutral. Well, if you're going to be neutral, you need to know that you're manufacturing, your government's manufacturing and shipping these armaments to the British in violation of the neutrality statutes, that is international law, and that if we catch that ship on the high seas, we're going to sink it, which, you know, makes all the sense in the world. Pay attention. Grow up. The real world. So, sure enough, they caught the Lusitania over there, and they torpedoed it and sunk it, and there was 200 and some odd Americans on board, and so immediately said, these dirty Huns sunk an unarmed British passenger ship and killed 200 Americans. See, what they didn't tell you, and this is our president, President Wilson, this is our administration, this is the American government now. Don't you think that they ought to tell us, now listen, we're shipping armaments over here to the British, and we're doing it over here because they're our buddies and we want to help them. So if you want to ride on this British ship, you know, you take your life in your hands, because if the Germans catch it out there, they're going to sink it. They didn't tell any Americans that when they were buying tickets to get on the boat. Then when the ship gets sunk, then our government comes back with this holy righteous indignation. I call it hypocrisy. I'm telling us, you know, look at these dirty no-good so-and-sos over here. And that's what they've done with the Arabs. Hey, look at these dirty no-good so-and-sos over here, what they're doing to our 15 British sailors. Now, they're not telling you a word about all of these clandestine operations that they've got going on, killing and terrorists and terrorizing these Iranians over there from Afghanistan and Pakistan. They don't say a word about that. Now, I'm not opposed to this war over there. I just like a little honesty. You know, let's be honest, realistic people. The Iranians have 10% of the world's oil. The Iranians have a government that we are in opposition to, and we need to destroy their government and steal their oil. Now, my fellow Americans, let's just be honest and upfront about it, and let's go do it. We're the big bullies on the block. We've got the nuclear weapons. We've got the need for the oil, and we can do it. But let's be honest and upfront, rather than sniveling cowards, sneaking around and acting like terrorists ourselves and being the world's number one hypocrites in the process. Now, in a late update, the U.S. Court of Appeals has stopped the release of this Poseida guy, and the court stated it wants to avoid Poseida Corrales' bond until his trial in May on charges of naturalization fraud and making false statements on his application for citizenship. But he will not be tried for murdering all of those Cubans on that Cuban airliner. Now, isn't America just great? Well, FEMA has now doubled. This is a new article here, a new item. FEMA, remember that wonderful organization that's down there in New Orleans, you know, to save all you people down in New Orleans there. FEMA has doubled its estimate of the number of prepared meals lost during the 2006 hurricane season. Because of storage problems, they've upped it to 13.4 million meals lost from 6 million reported earlier. Now, that $70 million lost to gross incompetence, which is a hallmark of our government. Our government is an absolute disgrace. I might point out here that this FEMA organization is the outfit, remember, that went down there to save the people in New Orleans, you know, right after Hurricane Katrina. It's a bureaucratic nightmare, and I wanted to point out that there isn't anything that government cannot do half as well for twice as much. And if that's what we want, that's what we've got. Now, Americans seem to believe that government is the cure-all to all of our problems. If there's a problem, let's go get government to get after it, and let's go spend some more money. We've got it with our schools. We spend more money on education than any other nation in the world. I mean, our per capita expenditures for children being educated is over $7,000 per student, average, national average. We've got schools in this country where we spend as much as $250,000 a year per student. Now, you know, I'm not here to rail against you. If that's what you want to do, I guess you don't get after it. But Americans are among the most ignorant people in the world. You've got people coming out of your high schools over here that can't find Washington, D.C. on a map. You've got students coming out of your high schools over here, kids, that don't know, cannot identify the years of the American Civil War. cannot identify George Washington as the commander-in-chief of the Revolutionary Forces during the Revolutionary War. I don't know, maybe it's not important to you, maybe it's not important at all, but it used to be that Americans knew something about American history. They don't anymore. And to some of us over here, we say, well, why do we need to spend $7,000 a year to teach students, young people, 14, 15, 16 years old, how to have sexual relations in the back of their Chevy van? Kids, I went to the public schools, we didn't have sex education, and we could figure out what to do with the girls in the back seat of the car without any public expenditures whatsoever. I don't know if it was natural, I don't know if it was good, but I know one thing, we didn't spend any money to teach sex education in 1956. Sure as hell didn't spend $7,000 a year to teach students sex. We could figure it out all by ourselves. Maybe we were more intelligent back in those days. But I'll tell you one thing. When I graduated from high school, which I didn't, I got to the end of it and quit, and then later I got one of those GED things. But listen, by the time I was in high school, halfway through high school, I could name all 50 states. See? And we didn't even have 50 states in 1956. But I could name all 50 of them, and I could name all of the state capitals. Now, isn't that just real special? And I could find Washington, D.C. on a map. I could even spell Washington, D.C. Now, you know, I got to tell you that education in this country costs us a lot of money. We spend a lot of money, and we think the government's going to solve all of our problems, and that FEMA is just the cat's meow. Now, you saw what happened in New Orleans with FEMA. When that happens to you, you're going to get the same results out of FEMA that those people in New Orleans got. I would suggest that you do some preparation on your own for yourself. I think you'd be money ahead. The scumbags that control our banks. I like Chapman's word. I'm going to underline that. Scumbags, he calls them. And out here on any construction job, we'd have some four-letter words for these guys in control of the banks. The scumbags that control our banks have for years waged a successful campaign to limit a federal program that was intended to make borrowing fees less costly by having the government provide loans directly to the students. Here comes our government now. Let's have the government provide loans to students. We have these student loans. When I was a kid, we didn't have student loans, but we had people going to college. They had to pay for it themselves, of course. Now, these same lowlifes, speaking of the bankers again, offered money to the universities to pull out of the federal direct loan program. The banks went to court to keep the direct program from becoming competitive, and then they benefited from the oversight so lax that the Education Department's Assistant Inspector General in 2003 called for tightened regulation of lender dealings with universities. Well, at Indiana University in 2004, Sallie Mae, the nation's largest student lender, offered $3 million that the university could use for opportunity loans to some students if they left the direct loan program. Indiana left the program for the cash, and they screwed their students in the process. So let's pause here for a moment and let's see what's going on here. Congress enacts a student loan program. It says, hey, listen, students, when they make application for this loan, they can get these low-interest student loans so they can go to college. Well, boy, doesn't that just tickle all of us. And so we said, well, that's a wonderful idea. God bless government. So they went ahead and they did that. Now the banks are taking a look at this, and they come along and say, well, listen, let's go to the university and let's see if we can't horn in on this low-interest program. Because it's administered by the college, let's offer the college a bribe of $3 million and have them pull out so that we can come in and take up the vacuum. We'll come in and take their place. Now, the banks don't offer these same low-interest loans. So the university comes along and says, well, that's a great idea. That's a good way for us to make money. And so they take the $3 million bribe from the bank. Now, the students over here have to borrow money for their student loan through the university, through the college, but they can't get the low-interest loan from the government. They got to get the high-interest loan from the bank. Isn't that just real special? That's why Chapman calls them scumbags. So the Bank of America did the same thing with the University of Virginia. God bless Bank of America, huh? All of this has helped give private lenders clear dominance of the $69 billion federal student loan industry. Private lenders cost the government vast amounts of money because they're subsidized and guaranteed against default. Isn't that just real special? Now, I want to tell you one more little part of the story. I got a student here who's a doctor. I mean, a medical doctor. And this woman gets paid $100 an hour. She works for St. John's Hospital up here in Springfield. $100 an hour. She works 12-hour shifts, 4 days a week, 48 hours a week, no overtime. They're under contract. They don't get time and a half. But she's making $1,200 a week. Now, let's see what much that is. $1,200 a week times 52 weeks in a year. No, it's $1,200 a day. $1,200 a day. Excuse me. $1,200 a day times... all 4 days a week, and she's making $4,800 a week times 52. That's a $249,600 a year. So she's making $250,000 a year. She has one of these student loans. This student loan amortizes over 28 years. She's paying daily rate interest. They charge her interest. I forgot what the interest rate is now, but it's something god-awful, like 15% interest compounded daily for 28 years. She's going to pay for her student loan a quarter of $1 million over 28 years. Now, the objective here that they're trying to do to you young people out there, they want to bury you in debt, so they send you these credit cards. Then they encourage you to take these student loans, and the objective here is to bury you in debt and make you a credit debt slave for the rest of your life. And now you can't bankrupt out of these credit card debts. You can't bankrupt out of your student loans. Now the banks have come in and preempted the government loan program with their private loan program that you can't bankrupt out of, and they can't lose on, because if you default, the bank gets paid by the taxpayers. And that's why Chapman calls them scumbags. Now, this is all being done behind the scenes. You don't get this reported to you by Katie Couric on the 6 o'clock news. You don't get this reported to you in USA Today or Time or Look or Life or Newsweek or any other publication, because the mainstream media is a part and parcel with the problem. Let me describe it. 60 Minutes wanted to do an expose on tobacco. This is many years ago now, when tobacco companies were advertising Marlboro cigarettes and Joe Camel on television. Well, along comes the tobacco industry, and they said to CBS, if you air that program, we'll pull our advertising off your network. And CBS went to 60 Minutes and said, you're not going to air that on CBS 60 Minutes. And they didn't. And Mike Wallace, years later, complained about that. And he said, if that's allowed to continue, then you can't have a free press. Well, welcome to reality, Mr. Wallace. All right, then another expose came up down in, I think it was Orlando, Florida, someplace in Florida. Two reporters. And they want to do an expose on milk. And so this isn't nationwide now. This is just a local TV station in a major metropolitan area. It could have been Miami, but I don't think it was. I think it was Orlando. Could have been Tampa, maybe Pensacola, something like that. Major market. It's a local TV station. Mid-America Dairies goes down there and says, if you put that expose on, we will jerk all of our milk advertising from your station. So naturally, the station says, hey, wait a minute. You know, business is business. We would like to inform the public of a serious health problem with milk, but we make a lot of money off of these milk advertisements. Now, you know, picture this. You are a dairyman. You're the milk industry. Well, if I was advertising, you know, if the George Gordon Law School was advertising on CBS, and CBS says, well, we're going to do an expose on the Gordon Law School, and we're going to tell you what a bunch of rotten, low-life, no-good scumbags that law school is, I wouldn't advertise with CBS either, and neither would you, and neither would anybody else. Well, you know, anybody that isn't brain dead. So, you know, let's just be realistic people out here. You can't do an expose on tobacco on CBS if the tobacco industry is advertising on your network. You can't do an expose on milk if the milk industry or the Milk Council or Mid-America Dairies is spending money with your TV station. All right, now do you see where reality is? You can't get truth. You cannot get the truth about Archer Daniels Midland from the Lair News Hour. Jim Lair is sponsored by ADM. You will never hear any reports that are negative about Cargill or ADM or their sponsors. Now, let's just be realistic people. So the only place that you're going to get that kind of information has to be from an underground newspaper that you pay for. And that's where the International Forecaster and these underground papers get their revenue. You have to pay them to make the report to you. I want to know about what's going on. And I can't get it from Katie or Jim because they're sponsored by the very criminals that are screwing you, blueing you, and tattooing you. So let's grow up and get real. And if it's not worth 6.5 cents a page to be informed, shut up. Sit on the back of the bus and believe and be educated by and propagandized by the major networks. I mean, it's a choice that we all have to make. And I don't get paid by Bob Chapman, by the way, to promote his newsletter. But I would like to expose milk, and I would like to expose tobacco, and I would like to expose government corruption. But you're not going to get FEMA to expose government corruption in FEMA. If you want any expose about FEMA, it's going to come from somebody outside of FEMA. And you're not going to get it on the major networks. All right. Now, with that said, let me give you a reminder here at the midway point so that we can satisfy all of these various and sundry bureaucrats that regulate the airwaves. And that is that you are listening to the Law Hour, an editorial review sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. Now, the Law Hour is heard 7 days a week here in the United States and worldwide over the Internet daily. For more information about the Law School and the Law Hour, please go to our website. Remember, that's georgegordon.org. The Law School teaches family law, tax law, courtroom strategy and procedure, business law, agricultural law, civil rights, and biblical law. From the scriptural perspective, that's 8 schools in all. The law school is a private, non-commercial, non-profit, non-sectarian law school, and it is open to individuals by prearrangement. The law school conducts a homeschooling program for adults on compact disc. If you'd like more information, please go to our homeschooling page on our website. The Law Hour website is updated weekly. It has a radio log schedule and archives, and that can also be accessed through the webpage. The Law Hour is carried worldwide over the Internet. All of these Law Hour programs are archived on the Internet by title and date. and the Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest. The Law Hour brings you timely reports on law, science, education, politics, religion, health, history, economics, news, and current events 7 days a week. The Law School offers a free 4-hour introductory CD package. Be sure to order yours by calling the Law School at 417-273-4967. Once more, that's area code 417-273-4967. Now, the sources of information that we use on this program are true, accurate, and correct to the best of our knowledge and belief. The Law Hour and editorial review gives credit to those authors and publications that we use on this program, and we often endorse and recommend books, periodicals, papers, and newsletters to our listeners. Now, these endorsements or recommendations that we give do not mean that those authors or publications that we endorse or recommend are necessarily going to reciprocate, and that's because most of these authors and publications that we cite here on the Law Hour may actually be hostile, or they may be political, religious, or economic or sectarian, or they could be racial or ethnic partisans whose viewpoint may not be totally endorsed by the Law Hour and editorial review. Now, these opinions, beliefs, comments, views, and expressions that you hear on this program are mine, and they're mine alone. They do not necessarily represent the beliefs and opinions of the advertisers or the sponsors or the management or staff of this network or local radio station. Now, if you'd like more information about the Law Hour and editorial review, please go to our website. Remember, that's georgegordon.org, georgegordon.org, or you can call us direct at 417-273-4967. All right, we're talking about current events, and we are at this moment in time reviewing the International Forecaster. Remember, the International Forecaster is available on the web. It's www.theinternationalforecaster.com. Again, that's www.theinternationalforecaster.com. That's our webpage. That's all one word, the International Forecaster, all one word. Now, their email address is internationalforecaster, that's two words, internationalforecaster, two words, at yahoo.com. Now, I don't mean to tell you that it's internationalforecaster, two words, at yahoo.com. I'm trying to indicate that the address is two words. International is one word, and forecaster is the other. All right. That's for all of you people that may have been educated in public school, like I was. I am still a public school recovering addict, still trying to recover from public school propaganda. All right, now, for every $100 lent by private lenders, the cost of the government for subsidies, defaults, and other items is $13.81, while the same amount lent through the direct loan program cost the government $3.85. Now, remember, we're still talking about these student loans. Student loans. The reason the banks want to get involved in this is because there's profit for them to make. It makes all the sense in the world for Bank of America to want to get involved in student loans. Because if the student doesn't pay the government and the government lent the money, the government loses $3.85, but if a bank does it, the government loses $13.81 for every $100 that they loan out. Now, the student loan volume has recently hit $85 billion a year. The banks simply bought off the universities. The Bush administration took no action as lenders offered special pools of money if universities would leave the direct loan program. Lenders by law are barred from offering inducements to gain loan applications. Sallie Mae was at the head of the pack, and it may be part of the reason that it is going private in a leveraged buyout. Now, this is a sad commentary on both the banks and the schools. Both should offer the best and the cheapest loans to students, and they don't. Greed somehow always gets in the way. Well, you know, you're talking about some big money here, and that's $85 billion. And as I said earlier, there isn't anything that government cannot do half as well for twice as much. And if you want to pay that kind of money for that kind of a criminal program, you know, get after it. Let me point out to you that in 1957, in Humboldt County, California, there were 237 sawmills operating in the county, 237 sawmills in that one county. It was in Humboldt County, California. Today, as I speak, in 2007, I think there's six. And the six that are left are all big. Competitive capitalism tends to monopoly. In the 1850s and 60s, when settlers began to move into Humboldt County, you could go out and you could homestead 160 acres. So many of the old homesteaders, they just went out and they homesteaded 160 acres in the Redwood Forest. And they, that is, thousands of little homesteaders, owned 160 acres of forest. And then they'd go out and cut down a tree and split it into grape stakes and fence posts, and they'd go out and they'd sell those. You had thousands of little woodworkers, thousands of people who were in the lumber business or in the grape stake business or in the fence post business, etc. Well, then along comes some entrepreneur, and he opens a sawmill. He makes money selling boards. So one day he needs more timber, so he goes over to one of these little homesteaders, and he says to the homesteader, "Would you like to sell out to me? You know, this is just business." And so there was a fellow by the name of Carson. He had a partner up there named Dole Beer. and it was called the Dolbear Carson Lumber Company. And when I was a kid, you know, the Carson Lumber Company down at the foot of, I think it was K, L, or M Street there out by the Carson Mansion, was still in operation. But as these lumber companies grew in size, they consumed more timber. So they had to buy more timber. So they would come to the little guys, and the little guy would sell out to the big guy at a profit, just like the university is doing here. You know, the Bank of America is a big guy, and they come along and they say, gee, here's an $85 billion a year business called student loans. I'm not insinuating the Bank of America is doing something that's necessarily criminal. They're just trying to get into this lucrative business. And so Dolbear and Carson, they're just trying to stay in business. They're just trying to get into a more lucrative business and grow their business. And so pretty soon, the Carson Lumber Company becomes one of the dominant lumber companies in the area, along with Holmes, Eureka, Pacific Lumber Company, and the Corbell Brothers, and so on. And this is around the, you know, 1870s and 1880s and 1890s and so on. And so little by little, the thousands of little timber owners are selling out to the big lumber companies. So by 1957, all of the timber, for practical purposes, is owned either by the government, that's lands that have not been homesteaded, or it's owned by these lumber companies, 237 of them. Now the sharks get more ferocious, because now all of the competition is among 237 companies. And all of the little independent landowners, for practical purposes now, are ruled out. So company number 237 buys company number 236. So now there's 236 companies. Company 236 buys out company number 235, and then there's 235 companies. And this goes on over a period of years. These are called mergers and acquisitions. Now there are some really big players in the game, like Pacific Lumber Company buys out Holmes Eureka. Now there are some really big companies, and these are big national companies, you know, like the Georgia Pacific Corporation, and so they come into the game, and the Weyerhaeuser Corporation, and they come into the game, and they buy out the Corbell Brothers, and they buy out the Pacific Lumber Company. And now we're down to the big Wall Street public companies, of which there are about six, who now own all of the timber and all of the mills in Humboldt County. I talked to a friend of mine up there the other day, old David, and old David said, I asked him, you know, how's the economy and how's things going in the old hometown? He says, well, there's not much lumbering or logging going on. There's one paper mill still operating, and it was sold to the Chinese. So the Chinese came in and bought them out. Boys and girls, this is called the world economy. Doesn't have very much to do with you and me. It has a lot to do with the Chinese government and the Chinese buying out one of those big companies. But I want to tell you that our God gave us the redwood timber. Our God gave us the land. And he gave us an instruction. He said, I want you to dress it, and I want you to keep it. And instead of taking the land, which was our inheritance, and dressing it and keeping it, we sold it like the prodigal son, and we've been out consuming it ever since. The consumption's about over. We are now outsourcing our employments. We thought we were going to cut a fat hog in the back. We would sell the 160-acre homestead, that we would go to work for the Pacific Lumber Company. We would live in Scotia, and we would have sidewalks made of cement and curbs and gutters, and we would buy our food down at the local supermarket. And we did it for many years. But competitive capitalism, boys and girls, tends to monopoly. And now we don't have our 160 acres. And now we don't have our jobs either. So now we've lost both our inheritance and our employments, and they're being exported to China, who is buying the paper company. That's why I contend. I think we're going to get more mileage going back to the Ten Commandments than sticking with the Ten Planks, I think. I'll tell you this, we were doing a hell of a lot better in 1870 when we owned the 160 acres than we are today with our jobs being exported to the Philippines, don't you think? Now, at the latest G7 meeting in Washington, Saudi Arabia, the UAE, that's the United Arab Emirates, China and Russia discussed how they would invest their surpluses. The recommendations were boosting domestic investment to increase oil supply capacity and supply, as well as planning for the lives of future generations. They might build refinery capacity outside their countries, and how they might invest surplus money in capital markets. Well, China's finance minister and deputy central bank told participants about China's plans to manage its $1.2 trillion in foreign exchange reserves, but that was not for public consumption. China did say they would not buy back their yuan, which would force their currency to appreciate against the dollar. They did not say if they'd stay in dollars or go into other currencies. Now, despite media claims, human carbon dioxide, or CO2 emissions, have not been scientifically proven to be a significant factor in global warming. It is proven that ethanol produces less CO2 pollution than gasoline. However, Much of this advantage is negated since a gallon of ethanol contains less energy than a gallon of gasoline. On a per unit of energy basis, ethanol is not much cleaner than gasoline. The University of Minnesota says pollutants are actually higher with E85. The ethanol-gasoline blend used in so many hybrid vehicles than with just gasoline. Although ethanol lowers some smog-causing pollutants, such as carbon monoxide, it actually increases other pollutants. Employing ethanol to reduce greenhouse gases is fantastically inefficient, and it costs probably as much as 16 times the optimal abatement cost for removing 1 ton of carbon from the atmosphere. All right, boys and girls, let's pause here for a moment. We've been sold on ethanol. Our government is subsidizing ethanol. Our Congress is passing legislation to promote ethanol. It's not a marketplace decision. It is a political decision. All right. Now, political decisions in economies is called central planning. The Russians and the Chinese have tested this central planning for many, many years, and it never worked for them. I would conclude that since the Russians and Chinese have been practicing central economic planning for most of the 20th century, and it failed totally there, that the same kind of central planning that they used and failed being practiced in the United States will probably have the same result. Now, I don't want to get in the way of your happiness and success, because we're all persuaded that government can do things a lot better for us than we can do them for ourselves. But I would like to point out to you that from the Bible, from the Scripture, thou shalt not steal, and you shall not have an unjust weight or balance in your bag, is the primary basis of free enterprise. Free enterprise is the exact opposite of central planning. Ethanol may be the greatest thing since sliced white bread, but if it is, in a free enterprise system, ethanol will ultimately come to the forefront and replace gasoline. If, in fact, it's a better product for less money and does a better job, it will sell in the marketplace better than a lesser competitor. It's just the way life is. That's why Toyota sells more automobiles than Chevrolet, because it's a better product. Now, that being said, we now have this central planning process. If we wanted to solve the energy problem in the United States, we Americans have more oil available per capita in this country than anybody else in the world. Anybody else in the world. Three states, Wyoming, Utah, and Colorado, hold 3.6 trillion barrels of oil. That's 3.6 times more oil than all the proven reserves in the world today. So my question is, why don't we develop our own resources? Why do we have to go to Iraq and steal theirs? The answer is economics. The reason that we need to go there and steal their oil is because that oil only costs $2 a barrel to produce, and our oil shale here costs $30 to produce. Now, boys and girls, let me take you through economics 101. The last time I saw some numbers, oil was selling for $60 a barrel. If oil can be produced for $2 a barrel in Iraq and sold for $60 a barrel in the United States, if I do my arithmetic correctly here, I put 60 down and I put 2 under the 60 with a minus sign, and that's 58. All right. So the oil companies make $58 a barrel profit. Okay. Now, if oil is selling for $60 a barrel and it costs $30 to produce that barrel of oil from the oil shale, I put down 60, and then I put down 30 under the 60 with my minus sign. I learned this from Mrs. Wiles in the third grade. I come up with 30. All right. Now, 58 is more than 30. Buy, and I'll put the 30 under the 58, and with my minus sign, $28. In round numbers, we can make twice as much profit by stealing Iraqi oil from the Arabs than we can by producing our own oil here. Can all of you Arabs understand the economics of our theft? It's nothing personal. Nothing personal. But for some reason, God gave you all of the good cheap oil, and he gave us more of the expensive poor oil. He didn't explain to us why he did that, but he most assuredly did do that. Now, we over here in the Western world, being smarter than God himself, can do the arithmetic here. And we can see that it's much more profitable to steal Iranian and Iraqi oil than it is to produce our own. It isn't because we don't have any. It isn't because we're have-nots like the Dutch or the Germans or the English. We got lots of oil over here. It's just that we can take it from you a lot cheaper, make an extra $28 a barrel. And so that's what we've elected to do. I would just like to be honest and upfront, tell everybody, well, that's what we're doing, and here's why. That's why I'm making this report. All right. So there's your economics lesson in oil. So now there's a little bit more to it than that. And we've decided over here that we want to produce ethanol. Ethanol doesn't have anything to do with oil. Hell, there's plenty of oil out there, plenty of gasoline. What we want to do is enrich Archer Daniels Midland, which is the biggest ethanol producer in the country. This is a political decision. Ethanol has nothing to do with the marketplace. We can produce gasoline and sell it in the United States for 12 cents a gallon, just like they do in Venezuela. There's no shortage of oil. We have a 666-year supply of it right here in the United States. Hell, we're not going to produce a barrel of oil in the United States when we can produce it for $2 a barrel in Iraq, Iran, and Saudi Arabia. And the next time you see some pictures of oil facilities, oil wells over there, I want you to notice they're not pumping any of it. It comes out of the ground under pressure over there. They don't have to pump a barrel, unlike the United States or even Venezuela, where they have to actually pump it, where it takes money, costs. Oh, no, kids, these are political decisions, and they have to do with central planning. And again, there isn't anything the government can't do half as well for twice as much. So if you want to pay $3, $4 a gallon for gasoline, hey, let's get after it. What we want is more central planning. We want more war. We want more cheap oil. And we want more central planning. We need more government involved in the centralized planning of our oil and gas production, just like we did with our lumber production. Let's buy out all the little guys. And let's concentrate all the wealth and power in the hands of just a few multinational corporations in a corporate fascist welfare state. Boys and girls, we are well on our way. Okay, and with that, I'm well on my way. I've got to leave it right there and remind you that you're listening to the Law Hour and Editorial Review, sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. The Law Hour is heard 7 days a week here in the United States, worldwide over the Internet. And for more information about the Law School and the Law Hour, please go to our website at georgegordon.org. Now, the Law School is a private, non-commercial, non-profit, non-sectarian law school. It is open to individuals by prearrangement, and the Law School conducts a homeschooling program for adults on compact disc. For more information, please go to our homeschooling page on our website at georgegordon.org. The Law Hour is carried worldwide over the Internet, and the Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest. All right, our time's up. We got to leave it right there. We'll see you back here tomorrow night, same time, same station, God willing, of course. Until then, thanks for listening, everybody, and good night, friends. We'll be right back.